Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Mattes. I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Yes, Ted, you're not wrong. It is a little early today. You know, Legs has a busy schedule, man. Most important man in all sports media over here, so we are a little bit earlier today. But how you doing, Legs?
I'm good, man. Just some days are a little bit more jam-packed than others for me. This is one of those days I had a very tight window to be able to do this, but obviously I wouldn't miss it, so I'm excited, man.
Of course, man. On today's show, we are going to talk about the Bucks getting a shorthanded win over the Clippers. Clippers kind of slipping. Bucks on a win streak now, six in a row. We're also going to talk about the Lakers beating the Thunder. And then later in the show, we're going to talk about Tim Legler's most intriguing players on sub-500 teams. We don't get to spend as much time on some of the sub-500 teams, especially in the back half of the season, but there are interesting players. So the back half of the show will be all about that. But first, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all they have to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Legs, let's get into it. The Bucks, without Giannis yesterday, carried a five-game win streak into their home arena. The Clippers come in reeling a little bit since the All-Star break, not playing their best basketball. I thought this would be a great game, and I thought it would be a win for the Clippers coming out of it when Giannis wasn't there. But it was not to be, in large part because Bobby Portis? Bobby Portis, 12 of 18, 28 points, 16 rebounds. He was dominant. What had stood out to you about this one?
Yeah, I mean, Portis was incredible, and it was amazing to watch. Basically, he and Lillard read the entire offense, 69 points, the rest of the team, 44 combined. So it was their show. Lillard was amazing, as he has been when Giannis hasn't played. It's something I've been talking about all year, the theme of, you know, Lillard feeling like he did in Portland. Because right. I don't think he's felt quite like that as a player alongside Giannis, except for, you know, some nights. But for the most part, he just never quite looks right to me, like not quite the same, except when Giannis hasn't played it. And Lillard can do what he did last night, which is be the same exact guy that we saw in Portland that is such a tough cover. He gets the three rolling, but he gets to the line a ton. For a guy that's not really – you wouldn't describe as like a physical guard. Like you expect James Harden, Luka Doncic to get to the line some nights, 10, 12, 15 times because they're initiating contact. They're so strong. They almost thrive on the contact. You don't expect a guy that's built like Lillard and is, you know, really known for his shooting as much as anything to get to the line 13 times. And, you know, those are automatic points because the guy shoots at a 90% clip. So he controlled the game. Portis, basically, they rode in the fourth quarter to get this win. And then the other big component was they played a 2-3 zone almost the entire second half. I don't know that I've ever seen a team stay right in a 2-3 zone in the NBA that long because most zones in the league, Adam, aren't very good. Right. Miami might be the one exception because they practice it a lot and it's part of their identity. Like they'll throw that in every single night and they'll mix it up. They're not going to stick with it for real because typically NBA players are so good offensively, particularly now with all the shooting, you can't stay in it because you're going to figure out a way to dissect it. And once you do and go with three straight possessions and score, a team's going to get out of the zone. Clippers, I don't know if they strung together three straight baskets the entire second half. So the Bucks got away with it. They stayed in it. And in large part, it was protecting Lillard defensively, and right, it worked. It worked. The Clippers, look, they missed some easy shots. It wasn't all that this effectiveness of their zone, but I will say the Clippers did not occupy the areas on the floor that you have to against the zone. They just never really made the adjustment, which is basically the foul line area, middle of the floor, and the short corner. You have to have people in those spots, and the ball has to go there. And then once you do that, you get into rhythm, you dissect it. There's so many shooters on the court usually, and you force a team out of it. The Bucks got away with it for an entire half, and they really limited the Clippers. Clippers scored 51 points in the second half, which 51 is really low number by today's standards. NBA. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about the zone there, though, because one of my questions about the Clippers, and it's really, look, they're not playing their best basketball right now. They were right before the break, so maybe this is just the ebbs and flows of a season. But one of the things I doubt about them, Legs, is their ability to adapt and problem solve. Not because they don't have the talent to, but it seems like they don't have the will. So part of me is not surprised that they run into the zone and it's like, okay, we have to change our comfort zone. We have to beat it another way. And they weren't up for that challenge. So to me, I wonder if this is indicative of something about the Clippers' identity that is a little bit of a flaw that's exposed.
Well, I think you're hitting on something. And to me, one of their problems is I think – they have the ball in James Harden's hands too much, particularly in close games late. I just don't think that is the best way for that team to operate. They're better when they come down and initiate with Kawhi Leonard, and they didn't do it too much. He was out the first half of the fourth quarter, and the Bucks made a run, and he may even have taken the lead before he came back in. I don't remember. It was close. But they were up, 10 points, and now he comes back in the game, basically 6-7 minutes to go, and it's like a tie game for the most part. And look, he was bad last night. And I don't say that very often about Kawhi Leonard. He was just not very good last night at all. He just did not. I don't know if he was tired or who knows. Was he feeling a little something in his knee or something? He just was not trying to implement maximum pressure on the team defensively. That's what he does. And he wasn't really doing that. Maybe the zone threw him off. And it was like weird. He wasn't operating in his areas of comfort because of the way the zone is laid out. You're not catching the ball on the short wing. ISO area. That's his favorite spot on the court because there's two guys standing there, one on either side, right in that spot. So it's a little bit more difficult. Maybe that's what it was. He just wasn't very good. But in general, watching the Clippers, and this was again last night, I just think James Harden has the ball too often, too much, too long in those particular times, and maybe even just throughout the game. And look, he's played very well for them, but I'm just trying to figure out how they can be the best version of themselves down the stretch of games. And I think Harden dribbling and trying to get a high ball screen against his own defense is not effective. And that's what they were going to possession after possession. And they got some good looks, but not enough of them. And they certainly didn't make shots. And then there was other possessions where they didn't get anything off good. And the Bucks really bottled them up because they reacted really well and moved well in that zone defense.
I'd almost disagree with you on Harden in just this one subtle way. I think that there are times when the ball probably should be in his hands, but it's not every time. To me, this is a great team, has a lot of different ways to beat you, and they know exactly when to go to which options. And it does seem like that's not the Clippers. They play a very specific way, and they can't deviate from it. So if you do throw them out of that rhythm, they look really lost, and that was one of the games. If we go back to the Bucks side, though, I got to first give a shout-out to that crowd. I love these crowds on teams like Milwaukee because last night that was a shorthanded game. The crowd was into it. And as they made their comeback, as they were making their big plays in the second half, it felt like a playoff atmosphere in there. And Bobby Portis, he hit a shot. He starts shaking his head. The crowd was loving it with a go-ahead basket. I just felt like the Bucks played with momentum and played with the crowd at their back in a way that it's not always the case in a regular season game that you kind of feel the momentum of the crowd. But last night was one of the ones where I thought that really stood out on the broadcast.
No, I totally agree. And I think – something else I think the crowd was kind of relating to was look at the lineup they were going with down the stretch. You had A.J. Green on the floor.
Oh, right? Shot too, man. That three he hit.
He had two of them, two huge shots in that game in the fourth quarter. Yeah. You had Danilo Gallinari on the floor. Yeah. He's basically just learning guys' names on that team. And then you had Lillard. You had Bobby Portis, and you had Lopez. Like, that's the lineup you're going with. So it's like there's also this feel, I think – yeah, again, the arena, and you're going up against that team with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, and I think you're like, this is like this underdog sort of lineup we have out there tonight. We don't have Giannis. We're not expected to win this game, and yet here we are digging our way back in, and they refused to get buried in the third quarter. They kept it just close enough in the third quarter. And Beasley actually hit his first shot of the game, a corner three, right before the third quarter buzzer. So there was 13, cut it to 10. And it, I think he'd missed his first six shots. And it was an interesting reaction because it's a momentum thing. And you can see the guys reacted to it. But then Doc Rivers, like, was out on the court, met Malik Beasley coming off the court. Huge smile on his face, huge hug for him, which I know that feeling. He's probably thinking, like, there you go, man. I knew you were going to hit one for me. And you know, there was kind of like this lighthearted moment, but it was also a big momentum builder going into the fourth quarter, and it kind of carried over. So I did feel the energy in the building. Before I forget about it, there's a couple of – well, I'll just go to one. One comment here that I see already pops up, because truth matters. I don't understand this comment. Tell me if you can explain this. You guys need to hold Dame accountable when he plays bad. Yeah. It's shameful y'all don't hold this dude accountable. I honestly do not know what that comment means, who he's directing that at. He must
be like a general media, I think. General media.
Oh,
like,
there you go. Okay, you know, that's fine, because you're not talking about everyone. This podcast. Because I literally have said a dozen times, something's not right with him. He's not quite the same. But if you want us to hold him accountable for last night, he was sensational last night. He was 41 points last night. And I just said he looked like himself, and he hasn't. So I don't know. When people say y'all and you guys, I don't know if that's just this overgeneralization about media in particular, because that hasn't been us. That has not been us. We've been very honest about Damian Lillard this year. And on nights he plays great, he's going to get a pat on the back, because that's a game they should not have won. They shouldn't have won the game. And two guys really carried them offensively, and then they had some like key moments sprinkled throughout. And then one last guy we haven't mentioned yet, and it relates to what you just said about the energy. This is one of the reasons you get Patrick Beverley.
Yeah.
He was a big part of that too. He was on the bench for the beginning of the fourth quarter, but then he was on the court later. And like, he came up with a couple of hustle plays. He hit a huge corner three, and just the way he reacts emotionally, he's that absolute prototypical guy that every fan in Milwaukee hated until he's on their team. Right. And we know guys like this, there's a list of those guys historically throughout the NBA. If he's on your team, you'll love it, because the emotion, they're instigators or agitators. Every team needs a little bit of that. When they're on the other team, you can't stand them. And they got a taste last night of why they like Patrick Beverley, why Doc Rivers got him. And he brought some emotion to that game and some energy to that game that they needed on a night Giannis didn't play.
I think if Bobby Portis and Pat Beverley are probably first team all, you have a star, one star out, and you need role players to step up and bring energy. Those guys are like the best in the biz at that. They were in their comfort zone last night in the, all right, we got to pick up the slack without Giannis, crowd behind our back. We got to do something. I want to go back though to your Damian Lillard point, because I think it's so interesting. This is the first time post All-Star break that he's led the team in scoring, 41 points. And to your point, if you look at his stat sheet, even 4 of 9 from 3, 12 of 22, that looks like the old Damian Lillard, which we don't see all the time. How can he, or does he need to adjust his game? But if not, if he doesn't need to adjust his game, how can he channel this more when Giannis is there?
That's a good question, man. I think it's more psychological than anything. I don't think it's a physical fit between the two players. I don't, except for the fact Damian Lillard in Portland, if he was on the court, I mean, he played with CJ McCollum a lot, but that ball was coming his direction off a make or miss, whatever, rebounded. Yeah. He was the guy a lot of times bringing that ball across half court and getting that initial action. Giannis gets a lot of that. So I don't know if that's something that's a little bit different for him. I just think living in like a shadow of someone for the first time in your life, really, as a basketball player, and what that feels like, not being the best player on the court for your own team, I just think that's an adjustment psychologically of there's this deference that you are considering for the first time in your life. Because prior to that, that doesn't mean you don't play like a team player. That's not the same as deferring. And this is the first time he's had to defer at times. And it takes more sometimes than the number of games they've played together. Sometimes that might take a year or two, where you really just feel this amazing ebb and flow. And it's just so natural and instinctive, and you just go be yourself. I haven't felt that much in him this year, and except for these instances. And he's still been very, very good sometimes when they need him to be late with Giannis on the floor. But I don't think, and I think Damian Lillard would admit this. And look, he's had some things that have been reported off the court that maybe have affected him mentally, whatever it may be.
For sure.
Living in Milwaukee, you know, it maybe, who knows? That's an adjustment for you personally. You've been in one city for 11 years. Now you're in another city. It's not maybe the city you wanted to be in, which was reported you want to be in Miami really badly. There's a lot of psychological stuff that goes into this. It's not just, hey, go be a robot, be a machine like you were. This is different for him, and it looks that way to me. It's not quite the same. And on nights that it is, you go, wow, okay, like they figure this out. This is the one team that probably has a legitimate shot to be in a ring with the Boston Celtics.
Oh, I think no question they do. And we thought that going in just with the talent, it took a little bit of time. But again, six games in a row now, that's a streak. And some of them have been against weaker opponents, but last night was not. That was a Clippers team. You know, Milwaukee was the shorthanded team, and they still got it. I think there's a personality shift to this team. There's clearly a defensive shift, still number one defensive rating coming out of the All-Star break, which is very impressive, 102.6. They're on their roll. They're making their moment here. Let me ask you this one. And we're going back a week or two. Giannis has been pretty vocal saying this is Dame's team. What message is that, a positive or negative message? Because I know it feels positive. You're trying to tell a guy, hey, be comfortable. I want you to shoot. I want you to do this stuff. But as much as I love Dame, Giannis is clearly the better player between the two. So are you comfortable with that message he keeps trying to say of this is Dame's team now?
Totally, but it's completely disingenuous, right? I mean, and here's what I mean by that. No one buys that.
Yeah.
Nobody buys that. What he's doing, and I compare this is exactly what LeBron James did to Anthony Davis when they were in the bubble. He wanted that to be Anthony Davis's show because the way LeBron views the game, and he knew his impact would be significant because of his ability to control the game, his vision, his passing, his facilitating, his defense, and he could still score whenever he wants to. But he needed Anthony Davis to feel more empowered, to like understand there is no thought process here. It is you. You do what you want to do. Be an attacker. I will play off of you. That's really what he's saying to Damian Lillard. I'm going to be good. Don't worry about me.
Right.
I'm going to go get 30, 15, and 8 in my sleep. So don't worry about that. Like, did you shoot three times in a row? Is that a problem for me? It's not. Just go be yourself. I will be just fine because there's so many ways I can impact the game. It's really just you're trying to empower someone. It was more believable when LeBron did it to Anthony Davis. I think maybe because of the stage of the career LeBron was at, and you were like, you know, he really needs this to happen for Anthony Davis. And I think in this case, it's like, okay, sounds great. And I know what you're trying to do for Dame, but the truth is like, that's just not really even close to realistic. Because almost every single night, Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to have superior statistics to Damian Lillard. Almost every night. Yeah. That wasn't the case with LeBron and AD. Go look at AD's numbers during that stretch, that playoff stretch. AD had better numbers on nights. And that's what I mean. Like, you can say it and now go back it up. Go ahead, AD. I'll be right behind you. That's not necessarily the case here. So it's just not quite as believable, but it's the exact same methodology. Right. That's what you're trying to get Damian Lillard to feel. Don't think, just go. Do not worry about me.
So it's a six-game win streak. You get ready to go out on the road now. They have four games on the road, all on the Western Conference. They play the four teams in California, Golden State, the Lakers, the Clippers, and Sacramento, all in a row, all on the road here. What do you want to see from them in this trip?
I think just the consistency defensively, right? That you can continue to buckle down defensively, and you don't have a lapse in a game where you give up 138 points and we're kind of like, you know, wow, they still have some issues. Like, the consistency at this point is what we're looking for. That's what has to transpire to make us, you know, really buy in here down the stretch and believe. But you know, listen, said it yesterday, I say it again. It's looking more and more, Adam, like this is going to be Milwaukee Boston, right? That's what we thought. We all thought that. And then we were all kind of mystified that, like, what this looked like for the Bucks. And I think the record was decent, but we knew something was wrong. Like, they were so bad defensively. And look, it's so bad that they made a coaching change with a 30-13 record. Right. You know, and then it was, you know, and I didn't even pay any attention to the record when Doc first took over, because I'm like, it's just so hard to implement anything. now it's starting to like look like a little bit more like they're connecting to him. It's looking more like his team. It didn't look like his team at first. It looked like a dude that just showed up, right, as an assistant, as a you know, a substitute teacher, and was just kind of standing there watching like all of us were, because you don't have any time to implement. Now it feels more like he's starting to have an impact with his communication, with the way that he can make guys accountable, with whatever tweaking he wants to run with his rotation, who's on the floor when. It's starting to feel more like his team.
I think the Bucks might be the most interesting team over the next 2 weeks. And I just looking at that schedule, so they have the California, you know, those four teams. They come back home and play Philly, and then they get Phoenix and Boston at home. Actually, Phoenix at home and Boston on the road. So they culminate what is basically a seven-game, you know, measuring stick seven-game stretch, and it all ends at Boston. And by the way, that's probably the last – they play Boston twice, but once is in the last week of the season. Boston will probably have the one seed locked up. I think this will be the most revealing two-week stretch about the Bucks and where they're at. And quite frankly, they look to me like a team that is ready to be what we thought they would be at the start of the season. So I'm excited for it. I think they're the most interesting team, and we'll see what happens. Let's take a break. On the other side, let's get to the other game that happened in the NBA last night that was of note, which is the Lakers smacking the Thunder. We just raved about the Thunder, but the Legler curse continues. We say nice things about a team and they can lose by 20 the following night. So we'll get to all of that and more on the other side. But first, we have a new sponsor today. It is Manscaped. Manscaped has a new St. Patrick's Day deal going on, Lawnmower 5.0. This is their latest one, the 5.0. It comes with two interchangeable trimmers, next generation skin safe blade heads, one of a classic trim, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. It's got dual LED lights, so you can do this in the dark, I guess, if you need to. I thought of every single little bell and whistle you could put on this one, including headlights on this one. So fear not. It's also waterproof. And then it comes, they have a bunch of other stuff. It's not just the trimmers and the shavers and the different men's grooming things that they have. They also have boxers. They also have different types of lotions and oils and different things for you to take care of all of your hygiene as a man. So right now, get 20% off and free shipping with code ALLNBA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code ALLNBA at manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make your little hairy leprechaun luckier with Manscaped. Also want to tell you about our presenting sponsor, which is, of course, DraftKings Sportsbook. You can get it on the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can deposit $5 or more and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. Tonight, you are looking at the Nuggets, 9.5-point favorites over the Suns. That feels a little high, even playing at home against a shorthanded Suns team, 9.5. That's tough. You've also can pick up the Mavs tonight. I'm trying to see, who do they play here? I just see Mavs minus 4.5. The Mavs have the Pacers at home, and they're 4.5-point favorites. That's actually a really good game. I'm looking forward to that one. So if you want to bet on one of those two games, you can hop on DraftKings Sportsbook, and you can lay down a no-sweat bet up to $1,000, and if you lose, you'll get your money back. Only on DraftKings with code ALLNBA, the crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY, that's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. One no sweat bet per new customer issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bet expires 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Back here, segment two of the All-NBA show. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We've got a lot of regulars that join in the chat all the time. Always appreciate that. Make sure to hit that like button, leave us a comment, and help us promote the show. Yesterday's show, Legs, was so good. Our lowest show of like the last 2 weeks, our lowest viewed show. Who would have guessed? Maybe it was because we talked about the Thunder and hyped them up, and everybody knew they were going to lose today. 116-104, they fall to the Lakers in Los Angeles. Second night of a back-to-back for the Thunder. They built a nice lead early on. I think it was like 22-11 to start this game, but it was all downhill from there. What stood out to you about this one?
All right, before we get into this, I'm so glad. I was hoping you were going to say my least favorite three-word expression.
Oh, no, back-to-back.
Did you just say back-to-back? All right, now.
Back-to-back, Legs.
Listen. This is a big moment in this show. I hope everybody's listening to this and tuning in. I'm sorry, I'm having a problem adjusting the height of my camera. Here we go. All right. I'm so glad you said back-to-back. Here's why. Because a graphic popped up during the game on the bottom of the screen. And I was like, wow, that's pretty fascinating. So I went and looked. I just bear with me for a second. I'm going to read to you Oklahoma City's second night of back-to-backs this year. Okay? Bear with me. 124 points in a win.
Okay. I love that you researched this.
134 points in a win. 129 points in a win. 138 points in a loss. 128 points in a win. Are you catching a theme?
I'm catching a theme. They score a lot of points.
140 points in a win. There's a bad one. 101, but in a loss to Minnesota, the best defensive team
in the
league.
That's a good defense, yeah.
Okay, 127 in a win. And that takes us up to last night. And the graphic at the bottom of the screen was their offensive rating on the second night of back-to-backs this year is the highest since the 1996-97 Chicago Bulls.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you might say, well, that's because you got five young guys. You know, they're young legs and whatever. My point is, listen, this team isn't affected by it, and I don't think that's an excuse for last night. I don't. I think the Lakers, and this is the third time they beat them in four games, and you've brought it up astutely so, size is a problem for the Oklahoma City Thunder at times, and it was again last night. And Anthony Davis had his way. Look, when Anthony Davis is playing with a lot of energy, he has his way against a lot of people. It doesn't matter how big you are. He's a problem, and he was a problem last night. And it wasn't just him. I mean, LeBron had a sort of a tame night by most standards. They got a great night at D'Angelo Russell. Austin Reeves really played well. Hachimura played well. Across the board, they played really well. And Shea struggled. Shea was not his normal automatic self operating in the areas of the floor he likes to operate in. He just wasn't. And they got held down pretty good. But I don't think the second night of back-to-back is the excuse. I think the Lakers defensively played with a lot of energy. And Anthony Davis, I thought, imposed his size on both ends. He was a problem offensively for them on the glass. And with any sort of rim run, he got wherever he wanted to in the rim runs. Dunks, catches, three-point plays, whatever it was, offensive glass, putbacks. He also was a big factor defensively in plays that he got to and plays that he didn't. Just his presence and being aware was a difference back there. So I just thought it was impressive performance on the part of the Lakers last night, more so than I'm reading into anything with Oklahoma City, other than, hey, is there something to this not being necessarily a great matchup for them if they were to get into a seven-game series?
Which, by the way, is very possible. If the Lakers make it out of the play-in, then they're looking at facing either the one or two seed, and Oklahoma City's looking at holding on to the one seed or maybe the two seed. So it is possible. I feel like a broken record when I talk about Oklahoma City, because my one concern with them, and it's a major one because it's a concern that you can't make up for, is size. And I just thought in this game it was another one where the size stood out. And it wasn't just Anthony Davis, to your point, who did dominate inside. He grabbed 12 boards, had 24 points. He was a plus 10 in this game. And he had a lot of easy buckets in this one. But it was also the size of the wing players. Like Hachimura, I thought, looked big in this one. LeBron even had a bunch of plays where he's driving to the rim and he's being met by a Lou Dort or a Kenrich Williams. And as good as those guys are, when you get a LeBron James out there, they're just physically not able to do it. So this was a game that played out. And then you talk about, you know, 17 more rebounds. You know, they won the rebound battle by 17. This game played out in the exact way I kind of would have expected. As did the last one, by the way. The only difference was the Thunder were able to pull out the win against the Suns. Tonight, they weren't able to make up that advantage, and it looked even more pronounced.
No question about it. And look, this is one of those games, and it's always going to continue. When they play well, when the Lakers play well against a team that's a good team, right, and they win, it immediately everybody wants to get this question going again, and you want to make that discussion about the Lakers making a deep run. And it's impressive, man. And look, they've played well. They've won 10 out of 14. And in that stretch, they've beaten some good teams. They've lost to some good teams. And then they've beaten, as you normally would in a stretch like that, you've beaten some bad teams, some bottom feeders. There's no doubt they're playing better since the turn of the calendar year. Like they're definitely better. I don't think they're going to be able to play themselves out of the play-in. Do you, Adam?
No, I mean, they're definitely a play-in team. They're probably a road play-in team.
Yeah, they're probably three games 9-10. Back in the loss column of those teams. Like, yeah. I don't think they're catching Phoenix and New Orleans. I don't see that happening. So you're looking at them and saying, okay, what does it really mean? Like, what we're watching, what does it really mean? And I just think it's this roller coaster with this team. And you want to jump on it, man, and go through all the curves on this ride. I'm more like, let's let this thing pull into the station at the end of the ride. And then you know, I'll let you know as I'm getting off. Like, was that a good ride or not? Because I just think that you have to, I think, suspend reality and belief in what this roster is and what this team looks like most of the year to think that they're going to be able to do what they did last year and make that run through a couple of rounds and find themselves back, like staring at a team like Denver. If they can even avoid Denver to that point. Yeah. Last year, they got lucky in that they weren't outside their bracket. So they didn't get them till the conference finals. It's hard for me to believe it. And I think people get so enamored with AD and LeBron that they always make you believe that they can turn it on to that extent and just control games and control series. And I just think there's just too many teams that I like better in the West. How about you?
I mean, I feel the same way. I love this Thunder team. I just, like I said, teams that have what I perceive to be a tragic flaw. And I know, look, every time I've done this, the comment section has been upset about it. And I understand it. Like, if you're a Thunder fan, you don't want any water being thrown on what has been a phenomenal season, like just an absolutely incredible and impressive season. But you and I are guys that like to analyze and say, okay, what are the strengths and weaknesses? Where are potential issues down the road? And I just see the size one. I do want to ask this, though. Both Shai and Jalen Williams had off nights. Was there something you saw specifically that the Lakers did to cause them to have off nights?
I did think Shai, for some reason, was having a harder time getting to his sweet spots, which is anywhere really elbow extended, slightly above elbow extended. He loves that area of the floor, you know, anywhere from 15 to 19 feet. And he was having a difficult time getting space in that area. And it was forcing him then to either pick it up and kick it out, or he was having to go ahead and try to finish something closer to the basket in the paint where the size played a good part. So I thought they did a good job in sort of staying with all of the stuff he throws at you, because he hits you with three or four different moves and counters in a very short period of time. And he relies on you getting off balance, and he releases the ball before you're ready. He just didn't really get into his spots very good. I did think they did a nice job with Jalen Williams. And Jalen Williams felt more pressure last night above the screen when he was handling the ball. NBA defenses typically don't get up into guys like that to that extent. And so he can come down, and he's a very good ball handler. He's not an elite or special ball handler that can now take a guy that's on his hip at 35 feet and hit him with something to get them to back up and now create space so you can go attack that ball screen. He's not quite there on that level. He's more like, if you give him space as he comes across half court and you're backing up and now that screen's going to hit his defender before he's felt the defender, he's a problem. But I felt they did a good job of like getting up into him a little bit and steering him away from the screen, forcing him to do a little bit more creative stuff with the handle than he's really comfortable or capable of right now. So I credit more, I think, the Lakers just energy defensively, paying attention to it. Like they made it a priority. It was a game plan against those guys, and they carried it out the entire game. And they just, I thought they played with just a more force than the Thunder did. Yeah.
I got two more things for you. The first one is D'Angelo Russell. He had 26 points last night in 5 of 11 shooting. He also had 4 steals, a block, 3 assists, 6 rebounds. He kind of did a little bit of everything. And he's having an up year. I always have a hard time, Legs, when there's a mold of player I don't particularly like. In this case, it's D'Angelo Russell. But he's made improvements as a player year over year, and he's looking really good. Do you feel that his improvements are meaningful to what the Lakers are doing? And are you impressed with what you've seen from him this year?
Super meaningful, first of all, to Lakers. I mean, absolutely vital. And I know we talk a lot about maybe some of the fluctuations of Anthony Davis. That was a huge topic last year in the postseason. Like Anthony Davis, the nights he seemed like he had low energy, right? They lost, and it was that's all we talked about the next day.
Every Davis. Other Davis, yeah.
Basically, that's what we did, right? So, and D'Angelo Russell had some big moments for them in the playoffs last year, but they were like very condensed moments. He'd have like a 5-minute stretch in a game that was important, but overall wasn't necessarily – I mean, he averaged 13 points a game, 31% from the three in 16 playoff games. So it wasn't like he was playing like he is now. This is so important to the Lakers because he's also a guy that's, you know, when he's catching shoot spot ups, and he had a couple of those last night, that's very important for this team because they're not a very good three-point shooting team. So any catch and shoots they get out of him and Austin Reeves, who, by the way, neither one of those guys are like a pure shooter, anything they get out of them on catch and shoots is great. More importantly for D'Angelo Russell, he can get into his own. They can run. He can run ball screen. If it's late in the clock, the ball gets swung to him and he wants to call a ball screen over, he's creative enough with his handle that he can do other stuff with it. And right now he's playing with as much confidence that he has played in since he got there. And it's vital because it gives them that other guy that right now, I think you're expecting D'Angelo Russell to have 20-point games. And before, if he had a 20-point game, it was like, wow, they got a lot of help from D'Angelo Russell tonight. Now it's like, yeah, that's kind of how he's playing. And it's like a formula that they're riding right now. So I think he's vital. I think it can continue because I just don't think I've seen him look this comfortable being this kind of rhythm since he got to L.A.
The last one I have here is the Thunder. And here's how I'm going to beat the Thunder hater allegations. I think they win a championship in the next 3 years. Like, this is not a team that I'm not buying the formula. I just think it's an incomplete formula because it's early in the formula building process. But as I try to think about how to round out their roster, this is a player I was thinking about the other day. I was talking to somebody about this, and I'm curious your thoughts. To me, I would love a player like Atari Eason next to Chet Holmgren. And the reason is, one, you're not losing anything defensively. That's a super versatile defender. Lots of athleticism. And because Chet Holmgren is such a good player away from the basket and can drag people away, I think you can have what the Nuggets have, which is, and what, you know, to some extent the Bucks have, which is you're going to space with your five and put pressure on the rim with your four through offensive rebounding and athleticism. To me, I think Atari Eason type would round out. Like, you were swap Giddy, you're going to play a little bit bigger, but I think Shea and Jalen Williams both are talented and skilled enough to play the two and the three as opposed to the three and the four is right now. And I think if you put a super athletic, strong, powerful power forward next to Chet Holmgren, not a center, and you move Chet to four, but a big power forward that's versatile like that, that's the type of player I would be looking for to round out the roster. What do you think?
I think that's a great description if you want to go that route. And then there's other people that think maybe, hey, listen, there are teams that can play two bigs together. Is Chet Holmgren better suited to play in the four? And you put like a more athletic, bigger guy, like 6'10 and up guy next to him that can give you a little bit more brawn and a little bit more help on the glass and help against the more athletic players and the bigs that bother you, that have hurt you in the past. That's another train of thought. But I think if you're going to go with Chet Holmgren as your center, that's exactly the kind of player that you would like to pair next to him. It's going to take some of the physical demands off of him because there are times
he's so strong.
Even last night I saw some plays where it's just like he kind of just succumbs to the fact that Anthony Davis is just bigger, stronger, and more athletic. And there's just not much you're going to do if he's on a straight line, catch the ball going toward the rim, and you're like not in perfect position to defend that with your hands up in front of him. If you're on his side, like Chet Holmgren is just not going to do much with guys like that. Look, fortunately for him, there's not a ton of guys in the league like that, that you got to worry about that are that big, that strong, that good. There's not that many, but guess what? There are some in the Western Conference that you got to deal with. And if you're Oklahoma City and you want to do what you just said, which was, I think, one of the boldest statements you've made since we started this show, the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to win a championship in the next 3 years.
That's how much I believe in their top three guys. And they have, I mean, let's be honest, they have 15 first-round picks. Like, they have the draft capital to make a big trade and bring in another piece. So that's all of it. But I like their big three. Their big three fits together in the way that you need your big threes to fit together. It's very rare for you to draft three players that not only are good, but fit.
I completely agree, which is actually a testament to their team because that's difficult to pull off when the best player of the big three is a shot dominant ball handling guard. That's not necessarily the easiest thing, right? To create flow out of that, because he brings it up, and a lot of times, you know, he's going to get something going. He's going to get a shot off. That's not necessarily the easiest thing to put skilled offensive players around sometimes that need rhythm, but they have figured it out there. And most nights it looks really, really good. Last night they got bottled up.
Well, I like the Tari Eason move. Again, I like Chet at the four. The people are, you know, that's the big thing. So people think you got to bring a five in there. But I think Chet is a 4-5 combo. He does some things that are five, some things four. And so you almost need a power forward that does some things that are five, some things that are four. And to me, Tari Eason is the example of a guy who's strong enough to guard your bigs so long as you have a rim protector behind him. He's strong enough to do that, but versatile enough that you're not playing two big lineups. It's still a switchy lineup that you can keep that defense. So I like him. He's the type of player that I would, if I were them, I'd be looking for. And who knows? They have the draft capital to maybe even pursue a player like that. That's where I'd be looking. All right.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
We got to get to your list, though. Most intriguing players now on sub 500 teams. We don't get to spend as much time always talking about the sub 500 teams, and there's a lot of them. You made a list of the most intriguing players. Where do you want to start?
All right. So I just went literally in order by just looking at how as the standings page pops up, and we were going with teams under 500, and I just went east west because east is listed first. Really nothing to this list in terms of any particular order. Okay. I've just grabbed names off these teams. Some teams didn't get any names, which is sad because you're a sub 500 team, and I didn't find anything interesting to talk about. That's not a good place to be, right? All right, so first one I'm going to go with, in looking at the East, the first team that's under 500 in ninth place right now, Chicago. I'm going to go with Coby White. Coby White's really intriguing to me because of the year he's had. And he's only 20. And by the way, nobody on this list, I have 12 players, nobody's over 25 years old, which makes sense, right? Because if I don't think a 33-year-old on a bad team is going to all of a sudden be like, hey, this is interesting. Right. Never seen that. You know, something new he's added. No, these are young players that, for whatever reason, have kind of struck a chord with me. And Coby White's that guy. Like, he's different this year. And, you know, he's been so good for that team, started every game. At one point I thought, you know, maybe this guy really is just suited to be a sixth man. Come off the bench, combo guard, get yours, right? Go be Jordan Clarkson, right? Maybe that's who Coby White is. And I think he's a little bit more than that. I think he's in today's league, this is more like what a lead guard looks like. And that's what Coby White looks like. And he's had a great year. And look, they're still in the hunt, technically. They're going to be most likely a play-in team. But I mean, as far as like playing, they're not completely eliminated from that. They will get at least one game at the end of the year that's a play-in game. But he's been really good this year. What do you think about Coby White?
I love him. I put this out earlier. I was wondering what other people's who other people would put on their list for this type of player. And for me, Coby White would have been on my list as well. For some of the reasons you mentioned, I didn't like his game. He's not the mold of player I like, but I like guys that compete. And that's the thing that he's really showed me this year is that he's a competitor. He wants to win. He's played in big, he stepped up in big moments, and he just has an edge about him. And so to get to 20 points per game this year, 5.5 assists, that's big because it shows me that he is trying to improve. He's aiming at a target that I did not expect him to be aiming at. I expected him to be aiming at the Jordan Clarkson tight target, same as you just said. And he definitely seems to be trying to become a more well-rounded player. And then 41% on pull-up threes, that's an important skill set for a guy because that's, you know, pick and roll, coming off pick and rolls and elevating. That's a big thing to have.
All right, next on the list, Jalen Johnson from the Atlanta Hawks.
Yep.
Freak athlete.
Yep.
You know, you look, he's 22 years old. So, you know, he's still just developing every year. And what he has done to improve from last year to this year is pretty dramatic. I mean, he's upped his scoring average from 6 points to 16 a game. Yep. He's increased his three-point percentage. Still not great, but 28 to 33%, taking more than twice as many. So he's getting more comfortable with the shot. He's 51% overall from the field, which is really good for a small forward that wasn't known for his shooting necessarily when he came into the league. And he's getting almost 9 boards a game, right, as a small forward. So
that's one of his big skills.
Yeah, he's got the eye-popping, you know, highlights that we've seen throughout the year. I mean, he does some stuff in the open floor, or catching lobs, or off, you know, tipping dunks and stuff like that. But I just think I'm really excited about like what his upside can be if he's a grinder that's going to add more polish to his game. What do you think about Jalen Johnson?
He seems like a grinder because he has a grinder skill set, right? Like he plays with hustle. He plays with energy. To your point, he rebounds. So to me, he seems like all those things. And I'm with you. He's like a key piece of that team, a sneaky important piece of what they do. And the type of guy that I think you probably almost – rethink your roster around when you're looking at, and I know there's been rumors, is it time to move on from Trae Young, this or that? He's a guy that you look at and say, yeah, but we have other pieces. Like we can make a trade and have other high level role players around whoever it is we bring in that can fit. And he's a guy. So I love that you brought him up. I'm a big fan of his. Haven't watched a ton of him, honestly, in the last like week or, you know, since post All-Star, but I've really liked his game.
I agree. I wasn't watching a lot of Hawks games here the second half of the season. No need to, but
triple double threat on times too. It's crazy.
Of what they have on that roster, he's, I think, clearly the most intriguing piece. Now we move on to the Toronto Raptors, and I'm going to go with Scotty Barnes. Because I just think another 22-year-old, and look, his coach came out and said he's going to be the face of the league, or he is the face of the league, or will be the face of the league, I guess is what he said. I don't know that that's ever going to happen. Particularly when you look at what's going on with Victor Wembanyama. I don't know. he's going to leapfrog a lot of guys that have been in the league a couple years more, I believe. But I just look at him, and he's an interesting player because I'm curious to get, ultimately, what is Scotty Barnes to you? Because to me, I'm still not sure, and that's why he made this list. I'm still not completely convinced overall. What is his upside offensively in this league? Because that's a big thing. If you want to be a legitimate star, your team's going to have to win a ton of games, and you are the driving force behind that offensively. Typically, there are very few guys in this league that are all-league caliber teams, all-league caliber players, right? So first, second, or third team all-NBA, which people think this guy can be. Well, first of all, you got to win 50-plus games probably to get in that category, most likely, around there. Then it's got to be – you're the engine for this thing every single night, which means a lot of nights you're the leading scorer. I don't know if that's what Scotty Barnes ultimately is going to be. What do you think?
I love Scotty Barnes. I'm a huge Scotty Barnes guy. And I like your point about – here's what I love. I love weird players. I love players that don't fit necessarily into a box but have high IQ and impact the game in a lot of different ways. He's one of these guys. Almost 1.5 steals and blocks per game from him. And that seems to me like the floor for him going forward. He's probably the best shot blocking guard or wing player, I should say, in the NBA. Non-center, non-power forward, best shot blocker there because he has really quick – he's a quick jumper. He really like reacts to things quickly, has good anticipation, and he has the longest arms. And then we put this stat out from our Twitter handle the other day. Players with the most Z bounds. Z bounds are when you rebound your own miss and then put it back in. He is second in the NBA at that. I think Jokic is number one by mile. Scotty Barnes is really good at that skill as well. And what that tells me to me is one, good touch. And two, you know, because you're grabbing the ball and lifting back in. And two, just good anticipation. That's a lot of just the steals, those types of rebounds, the contested rebounds. To me, that's anticipation skill. He has a lot of that. I think he has a tremendous feel for the game. You're right that he's weird as a cornerstone piece because I don't think he'll ever be a like super volume scorer. I think he'll top out at 24, 25 points per game. But to me, he's a great type of player to put around a cornerstone piece. He's a great number two because he does so many different things. So I think I'm higher on Scotty Barnes than just about – I'm in the 99th percentile of people that are high on Scotty Barnes.
Yeah, I like him a lot too, but I do definitely think that you're probably a little bit – maybe one tier up from me in that discussion. And it's the kind of thing we get to revisit every year with him because he's so young. And over the next 2 to 3 years, I think that's when you're going to really find out, like ultimately, like what this guy's place is in pecking order in the NBA. I just found him interesting because of that reason. Not much else on that roster that I find really interesting. Next, I got two guys from this roster that intrigued me. It's Charlotte. Not a lot of reasons to watch Charlotte, particularly once LaMelo went down. The first one is clearly Brandon Miller. We did a whole segment on him. You know, we did a long deep dive on him, so we don't need to go too much on him right now. But they got it right. That guy can play. That guy can really, really play. And he's gotten so much better as the year has progressed, and he's continuing to get his three-point percentage up. He's doing more with the ball creatively. He just flat out can score, and he does it really effortlessly. And for that reason, he's really interesting to me. And the other guy is Mark Williams. Mark Williams has caught my eye when I've watched him play. And I think, I don't know if ultimately, like, this is where, you know, he's going to end up, you know, finding his true niche, where his true value is, because maybe it's going to be on a team down the road, Adam, that's like really good and playing for something that can really use a guy that rebounds the ball the way he does. I mean, if you play him significant minutes, the dude is going to go get boards. He's only playing 26 minutes a game. He's basically a double-digit rebounder. He goes and gets – and so for me, the guy that plays with that kind of energy, that's got that kind of bounce, he'll finish anything you throw to him. He's 65% from the field, so everything you throw to him around the rim, he dunks and finishes. He's an intriguing player for me that no one's going to even talk about or notice because of their record, and you're not really watching those games anymore, and his scoring numbers aren't really anything they're going to jump out. But he's basically – you know, 13 points, 10 boards in 26 minutes. Pretty good.
Yep. And he has, and you talk about the pairing with LaMelo. I mean, that's what you're looking for, is some guy that can do the things that he does. So I'm with you on him. He's an intriguing player. I like that you brought up Brandon Miller, because he's another one that 16.7 points per game is, it seems like it's not that much. That's a lot of points for a rookie, especially when you factor in he wasn't scoring like that right out of the gate. So I was trying to look it up as you were talking, players to average 16.5 points their rookie season. And there are 24 players in the last 15 years. That's not that many, right? That's 1.5 per year rookie players will average that. I know numbers are a little inflated this season, but the names that are on that list, I'm trying to see who the worst player is, because you're talking about Blake Griffin, Karl Anthony Towns, Damian Lillard, Donovan Mitchell, Luka Doncic. These are the star players. So for Brandon Miller to be in that group, you know, it's under the radar that he has been scoring at volume as a rookie.
Love it. All right, jump to the West. First team that comes under the Mendoza line, as I call it, Utah. Colin Sexton.
Yeah.
For me. And this is a guy that's been around. So some of these other names, like, you know, haven't been around as long. This is his sixth year in the league, but he's 25 years old. And the reason he's interesting to me is because people forget this guy averaged 24 points a game in Cleveland his third year in the league, and was doing crazy things on a nightly basis that we were all watching and intrigued by. Then he had this serious knee injury. He played 11 games the following year and 48 the next year, which was his first in Utah. And then finally back to full health this year, 62 games, 39 starts, and his numbers aren't what they were back then, but his minutes are still down from that point. He's only playing 25 minutes a game, but he's averaging 18 points a game. And more importantly, when I've watched Utah play, which during one stretch when they were getting hot, we were watching him a lot, I was like, he's made it back. He's all the way back athletically. Right. And so I think there's even more upside there for him, because we were so enamored with him that early in his career, and he kind of had the knee injury, went away. You're thinking, well, if that guy lost some bounce and some quickness, then guess what? 40 other guys in the league or just became Colin Sexton. And he's surpassed that. He's made it back to a level of quickness and athleticism that kind of separate him along with the shooting ability, 40% from the 3-point line again. So I'm just really intrigued by his comeback and what the future holds for him, because he's only 25 years old.
The assist to 4.7 assists per game. To me, his vision, his passing, because he's a small, quick guard. So how do you hang around the league? You've got to develop the point guarding part of this. And while I still think he has more to go, it's a huge improvement over year over year. I mean, his last 2 years, he's basically at 2.5 assists per game. This year, he's almost at 5. So that's a big jump for him. And it shows when you watch the tape as well.
Also, teammate of his, Keontae George. Very interesting to me, right? He's been really good. Got some starts for them, and he's been a little streaky, but his upside on a given night has been enough for me to see that he can play. And they've had him on the game on the floor when the games were really important there during that stretch. They were kind of getting their ship right. He was on the floor at the end of the games, and for you know, a young player, 20-year-old, to be out there in that environment with some vets. And the ball was in his hands quite a bit. That told me a lot. So I just think Keontae George is a really interesting prospect to watch for them as well. One of the reasons you'd watch Utah.
For sure. Good measurables on him too. He looks the part. Just to me, a long, lanky point guard. So I like him as well.
All right, Houston, how about Şengün? Right, you got to put him on the list because we're still trying to figure out what exactly he is. He's super skilled, so talented. There's a lot of Jokic in his game. There's no denying that. Probably the closest replication we have to just the way he plays and stylistically the way he plays.
No question.
And so the question is going to become, you know, what at his best is that going to mean in terms of putting people around him and to what heights can you carry a franchise? That's what's very intriguing about him because, again, so young and so skilled and so talented, but on a team that people, you know, we were watching him early and then they kind of fell off and we're not watching Houston as much anymore. What do you think? What do you think about Şengün's year and ultimately upside?
The thing I'm most curious with him is just going to be his touch because for me, that's the big difference between him and Yoke. Also size. Yoke just is a bigger bodied guy and he uses that to his advantage a little bit more, but also the touch. When Şengün entered the NBA, he did not look to me like a guy that was going to be a strength of his. Floaters, little jump shots and finishes around the basket. Cause if you're not, he does have more athleticism than a Jokic and he flexes it every now and then, but he's not going to be a super athlete where he's just spinning and dunking on guys constantly. So you're going to have good touch on those shots. And this year, you know, shooting 69% 0 to 3 feet in the floater zone, he's up to 50%, which is just a slight increase year over year. But to me, that's going to be the major pressure point for whether or not he's your number one guy that you build around or whether he's a supporting piece is, can he score with the jump hooks? Can he become an elite scorer there? Because that completes all the pressure that he puts on the offensive end of the floor.
All right, next team, I'm going to give you a choice because I got two guys from this team and they're probably not deserving of having two guys discuss. So do you want to talk about Shaedon Sharpe or you want to talk about Scoot Henderson?
Man, we got to talk about both of these guys, to be honest.
All right, let's start with
Shaedon Sharpe. Start with Shaedon Sharpe.
Shaedon Sharpe, man, oh, man, so interesting, so intriguing. You talk about bounce, my goodness, and like loves thriving on the baseline as a cutter, slasher, driver. That's like his favorite area of the floor. Still trying to figure out how good ultimately his shooting splits are going to be. Like, can he really develop into that guy? You combine the athleticism with the ability to be fairly consistent from the 3-point line. I think he plays very, very hard. And that's a great quality because I think he does want to be great. And you can't help but deny you're intrigued when you see that level of athleticism. What do you think about Shaedon Sharpe?
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
I think he's going to be one of those. And it's not that they don't, I mean, they have Simons who's really good, but they have a lot of youth in their backcourt. And I think he's a guy that is going to shine if you stick him with a better point guard. But I love him. I actually am. Shaedon Sharpe to me is probably, for me personally, more interesting than Scoot Henderson, but they're both interesting.
All right, let's get into Scoot then, because look, I personally felt that this was a can't miss pick. I really did. I just thought, this is what the modern NBA was built for, a guard like this that can come off ball screens with that sort of explosiveness. And, you know, his shooting was streaky, but it was like, you know, his mechanics aren't what I would call classic, but the ball was going in a lot against his level of competition. It hasn't really that much this year. And look, that there are a lot of guys that struggle to shoot early and figure that out. The more I watch him, I'm thinking maybe this guy caps out, Scoot Henderson caps out at a 42-43% type of shooter from the field overall. And he's in that 35, you know, in a good year, 38% from the three. I'm just worried about the shooting numbers coming up. And then the main thing I want to see, though, I could live with that if the decision-making improves. Like, he's basically going to turn the ball over almost every time for every assist he gets. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out, too. And he's so young, and it's you're not certainly not writing a final chapter on him, but definitely thought he would have a better year, particularly in an environment that's not really that competitive, where you're not feeling any pressure as the third pick in the draft. You're just trying to develop. I wish that I had seen a little bit more efficiency out of Scoot Henderson this year. What have been your views when you've watched him? First of all, what'd you think about him coming in?
Because I don't get into the draft. I'm doing NBA, too many things with NBA that I'm not watching, you know, pre-draft stuff. So I didn't have big takes from him. Liked what I saw in Summer League. But the thing I question about him when I watch him in the NBA, when I really start to evaluate these guys, I am skeptical about players developing shooting, because some players do develop shooting, but it just seems like there some people have an innate ability to grow as a shooter, and some people seem to me to not have an ability to grow as a shooter, and you don't always know who's who. And then the second thing is vision. I am always skeptical at a player's improving their vision / feel for the game, because that's another thing that just feels like there are players that have the aptitude to get in and watch tape and grow and learn from experience. And there's some players that go 10 years in the league and still don't read the court at all. And I don't know. So, because to me, he has a long way to grow. If he's going to be a star player, he needs to be a better decision maker. But when I watch him play, he just seems to me like the type of guy that's never going to have elite feel for the game.
I think that's all fair assessment. And, you know, the great thing about this list, and we got one more guy on it. The great thing about this list is that there's just still, for the most part, so much more upside and years before we have to make final determinations on these players. All of these guys, for the most part, right? They've got time. And there's no telling what because one thing you can't do is look inside a guy's chest. You cannot determine how bad do you want it. Like, how hard are you willing to work to tighten up the weaknesses in your game? So,
this is the thing is I trust he's going to work really hard, but the things he has to get better at are almost not solely dependent on hard work. And that's why I brought it up. Shooting, there are guys that take 1,000 shots a day all summer and don't improve as a shooter. Vision, there are guys that study and study and study and still don't feel the game, and that's why I bring it up. But I do think, look, the guy's a super athlete. He plays incredibly hard on defense. He's going to be a player in this league for a long time, but to be a star player, he needs the things that are just so hard to gauge if a guy will grow.
All right, last one, last team. San Antonio Spurs have a particular player that's pretty interesting, and Victor Wembanyama. We did a lot on him.
Too obvious almost, yeah.
I want a couple things I discussed with him on the air on TV today. I just want to kind of run by you. So I was asked to give a ceiling for him, and I said, "Well, that's by definition doesn't make a lot of sense, because you're implying that there is a limit." And with a guy like this, I'm not sure that's even fair. So I just instead decided to describe him in this way. I think this is where I would view potentially he could go: offensive dominance of a Joel Embiid. Defensive presence of a Giannis, and the entertainment value of a Steph Curry. Because I think, right, he's that guy. He's going to be that guy. You're going to have to see if they're playing. Eventually he'll become that. And especially when the team gets better, and if that Spurs are coming to town, you're going to have to go see that game. I think he's going to get on that level. So I don't want to put limitations on him and what ultimately he can be. But I've seen enough to know that I think that the league's got a problem on its hands, because he's getting really comfortable way faster than I thought he would. And I can't even imagine what an entire another off season is going to look like to Victor Wembanyama coming into next year. And you know, how fast it will be before they get competitive. You predicted next year they would be relevant in the Western Conference. I think they could make trades.
They could, if they make the trade. I don't think it's going to be just with Devin Vassell and you know, Keldon Johnson. I think if they retool their offense or their roster, I think they could become great.
Can I give you another thing that came up on the air today? They were asking me to say that, you know, in terms of impact, both ends, best rookie since. And I went back and I looked at the entire list of rookie of the years. And I think the name I had to go back to, because of the defensive presence. And by the way, this isn't the number of research gave me today. I couldn't believe this. When Victor Wembanyama, you better heard this. When Victor Wembanyama is on the floor for the Spurs, it's the sixth rated defense in the NBA. Right. When he's off the court, they're dead last.
Yeah.
I think about that. Okay. So I thought I might have to go back to Tim Duncan, 97-98. And Tim Duncan was 21 years old. He played 4 years in college, totally different comparison, but he was 21. Points, 11 boards, a couple of blocks, improved by 36 wins that year, by the way. But that was also because David Robinson came back after missing the previous year. But I think that's where I would have had to go. That came up, and I'm looking at Wembanyama, and I'm saying, man, defensively, there's just no telling how good he can ultimately be and how much of an impact he's going to have.
So my thing, you said the defensive impact of Giannis. I think it's higher than that, just because I think he projects. He has a rare ability to be the greatest defender that we've seen because of his ability to play the perimeter and get steals and get blocks. I mean, he's getting a 5x5 his rookie season. He should have had two of them his rookie season, which is insane. To do that, you know, as a 20-year-old, the defensive ceiling, I am just completely sold on. Offensively, I'm a little more skeptical. Joel Embiid, interesting comp. He has that upside because he has all the
talent. Well, here's the way to, real quick. Obviously, I'm not comparing style. He's not going to be a power player like Embiid. I know that's not what I mean. I'm just talking about his ability to score all over the floor as a big man. But you don't, and at that level, like where he's hungry to do it every night. Like I can see him being potentially like a 30-point per game scorer in this league and doing it in a variety of ways. Like not just a guy that's going to be a perimeter shooter like Dirk, not just going to be a post up power player like Shaq. Like some morphosis of the two of them. I think that's why Embiid kind of came to mind because he controls the middle area of the floor. He's a power player. He shoots threes. I think Wembanyama is going to be able to do all of that.
He's harder for me to project than defensively. Defensively, I just think his upside is literally the best defensive player of all time. Just anybody that comes in at 20 years old and puts up a 5x5 and puts up 5x5-esque numbers consistently, to me, I look at it and I go, it's not easy to get five steals. It's not easy to get five blocks. It's not easy to do both in the same game. He's doing it already. So his upside is insane. I think it's a good list, Legs. It's a good list. It's good to kind of give some shine to some of these sub 500 teams.
Because with the exception of Wembanyama or one of these teams getting hot and we have to talk about them, a lot of these guys unfortunately are not going to make our show too much the rest of the year. And that's why we thought it'd be a good time. Because from this point on, with what's going on with these, you know, these races and these teams trying to figure out who they are still that are contenders potentially, they're going to get all the shine the rest of the year. They're going to get all the light. Wembanyama, we're always going to do an update on him. But the rest of those guys. Yeah, the rest of those guys probably aren't going to get much talk, so we wanted to give them an opportunity today.
And the nice thing about the NBA is there are 20 teams in the playoff hunt right now. That means most of the league, it's not like we're cutting out 25 teams, only talking about five. There's 20 teams that are still relevant to the postseason conversation, and that's what makes it pretty exciting. We appreciate everybody hanging out with us the first 2 days of this week. If you didn't catch out yesterday's show, you should go check it out. There was some really good stuff in there about some key teams at the top of the West and the top of the East. So go check out that one if you did not. We're off tomorrow, but we will be back. Thursday and Friday are going to be a lot about the Celtics and the Nuggets. Tonight, the Celtics and the Suns square off. That should be a good one. If the Nuggets win that one, Celtics and Nuggets going to be carrying in big win streaks into that Thursday one. Oh, we do have a super chat. Super producer Emma reminds me. Oh. What do we got here? Leighton asks, love the early start. Grateful for any old time, though. Well, worked out for you today.
Sometimes it's going to be the case. Then we got some more of those coming up.
I know. People have been noticing your background different all the time. They're like, is he remodeling every day? No, Legs is an international man of mystery, always on the go.
I'm literally, as soon as we get done, I'm shutting my computer and running across the street to get in the studio for more TV. So.
Well, we'll get out of here for you. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. Hit that like button on the way out. We'll see you Thursday.